session number 24825, reel 10.
People talk of the Second World War being the war that had to happen in respect. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, it had to happen, inasmuch that if you look back, Germany was overrunning everything. And where do you stop these people, or how far do you tolerate them? And if you do tolerate them, how far are they going to go? Well, it's obviously such was the line of approach that the Nazis had over the country. They would have just occupied the whole of Europe, including England and France, and they wouldn't have stopped anywhere. That was not their style. They had some idea about being a superior race, and this was not bullshit. It's an absolute fact, because I've seen a lot of their German propaganda when I was in their hands, and they were quite convinced that they were a master race, and it was there. God-given right to overcome the rest of the inferior world.
How did you, on your return home, how did you view the government that you'd gone away for, and king and country, and what you'd been involved in doing for them? How did you view them?
Well, the idea of the king bit, that had gone down the plug hole. Singapore finished that. But I felt intensely patriotic. To me, this is a marvellous country. It hasn't developed itself to its maximum by any means. And I don't know how it is going to, because we need so much foreign capital, which is always supplied with a lot of conditions. But to answer your question, I felt intensely patriotic. I was very proud of my British ancestry, and I was looking forward to becoming associated with patriotic attitudes from here onwards, ad infinitum.
How do you view the way they saw you and what you've done for?
Oh, well, they did a lot for us, my word. There was this trade thing. I mean, I had a nasty experience getting a trade. Thousands of men didn't. They took off joyfully. I needed counselling. I can see it now, but I couldn't see it then. And I moved from job to job. I got nowhere in life as far as advancement within a firm went. And as far as the government went, they made the apprenticeships available. They made home finance available at 3% per annum. Well, you couldn't do any better than that. I know I finished up building a house weekends, and I paid rent for the next 40 years at £20 a month. Well, that's a phenomenal thing. Plus the fact that the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the Repatriation Department, as it was known then, attended to your health, and which were any war caused ill effects, which, again, was an asset. And The government, in my opinion, generally did the right thing by the boys.
In respect to sort of education that you've been given, what did you actually come away personally with from your experience in the Second World War?
My prominent thought was, this is the only country in the world, and I suppose every man born in any country thinks that. What did I get out of it? I realised the stupidity and the hopelessness of it all, because while I was away in a prisoner of war camp, my father died from the effects of the First War. And this made me realise how damn stupid it all was from the working man's point of view. But as I always tell people, you don't fight a war for what you're going to get out of it. You fight for what you're going to lose if you don't win it. And if we had a lost, we would have gone back 1,000 years as far as Australia went, because we would all been enslaved. The Japs would have got their iron ore, but we'd all been up there with picks and shovels getting it for them. And people of today cannot visualise just what it would have been like, and I'm basing my comments on what happened. That's one feeling I had. You had to keep this country free and keep it away from the invader. Well, of course, that again has turned out to be a fallacy, because they just come in broken down old boats now, and instead of turning them around, we bring them ashore, and then they create riots, and then our legal profession can see money in it, and away she goes again, and we're being invaded. There's no doubt about that, in their own little way. And then when they do get in their little cliques, they start to realise what they can do and achieve, and they use every legal system within this free country of ours to do it, whereas if we carried on like that in their country, we'd all been shot long ago.
Some people would say that they're escaping that very situation to come to a place where they're given what we have as a given right that they wouldn't have.
It's a dicey one, I know. I must confess I have no real positive thinking, because I had no positive conclusions. I try to think it all out. I can see what you're saying. And the way they are invading this country is very similar to what we did in 1788. And the feeling that we have about these illegal people is what the Aboriginals must have had about us. And I don't know the answer to all this. It's beyond my limited capability.
We could debate this for years, obviously.
Yeah.
The situation in relation to your experience of the Second World War, though... In sort of looking at things like reconciliation, you mentioned the Japanese experience in relation to the prisoners of war that you deal with. How do you see things like reconciliation?
With the Japanese?
With the Japanese, well, if you feel reconciliation is necessary with the Germans as well. My impression is that the reconciliation with the Japanese is much harder than with the Germans.
Quite frankly, I always regard the Germans as being victims of the Nazi regime, the same as anywhere else. To me, the Nazis were a cancerous growth within a fine nation, because I've met some wonderful Germans, and not only during the war, but since then, who've immigrated out here and who come here on holidays and so on, and they're as good as anyone. Therefore, someone implanted the wrong philosophy in the thinking of the generation at that period, and he had good reasons for it. Or he had a fertile ground, put it that way. I feel reconciled with the Germans. I can tolerate the Japs, but I realise eventually my generation is going to die out, and perhaps new attitudes have been put into force. It's me that's left behind. But again, this is because of the influence that they have imparted to me and to my generation. Although I was not in the hands of the Japanese, my teenage mates were, and this is very hard to accept as forgiveness. And yet when I meet them, as an individual, I have no sense of animosity. But as a nation, no, we're...
In relation to this tape and the recording we've now made, 4.5, 5, coming to 5 hours, someone that you don't know listens to this tape in 150 years time, what would you hope that they would get out of listening to our discussion?
I would hope that down at my level, which is a working class level, that there's very little to be gained. I can only repeat, you don't fight the war for what you're going to get out of it. You fight for what you're going to lose if you don't win it. But I hope by 150 years from now, all these smart galahs at the top of all our nations will have sorted out the world's problems, which of course is impossible, because I think while there's two men alive, they'll fight each other. But I do hope we're about to live in peace. But deep, deep down inside me, I'm convinced that not 150 years, but maybe within 1,000 years from now, humanity will have wiped itself off this planet, which has been going for millions of years. And we are only just passing through, and we have reached a stage where we can destroy all the life on it, so it'll happen, because there's never been arms created and made that haven't been used. And this is my ultimate attitude towards it.
What would you hope for a schoolboy in 150 years' time might learn from your tapes?
I hope he might learn tolerance. I hope he might learn to be always on his guard, because this is a wealthy country, Australia. When I say wealthy, I mean from a mineral point of view and agricultural point of view. I don't know about the financial side, but we produce the things which are necessary, the basic things. Therefore, we are wealthy in it, but we are vulnerable. There's not enough of us here to defend and attack, but when we're wandering away from your question. Now, I hope that people will learn to share what is on this earth, and share it in companionship, but I fear that the horrors of religious attitudes are coming back into force at this stage of our history, and I don't know where it will finish, because...
In relation to your experience and the experience that you related about the Second World War, what would you hope that, that someone who's never experienced the Second World War, has never ever met you, or is was never related to you, would get from listening to your story about the Second World War?
I hope they would get an impression of the necessity to live in harmony with your fellow men. That is just about the bottom line. Mm.
Well, as I say, we've done 4.5, coming up to almost 5 hours. Would you like to finish it there?
Well, there isn't much more to finish as regards all the war episode. There are other little things which may be of interest to some character 150 years from now. When we got back to Australia, my wife came out to Australia 14 months after us. Everybody, all ex-servicemen, were trying to build a house at the time. My brother-in-law finished his house and way down toward the coast in some scrub country called Scarborough. He built a timber-framed asbestos place. I had been down south working. I now had 2 children, but I wanted to get back to Perth. I had a block of land in Perth, which I had bought because a mate wanted to sell insurance to the fellow who owned it. He said, if you sell the block of land, I'll take some insurance. So I bought the block of land, so as me make a buy, sell some insurance. I went south for a while with my wife and 2 daughters, which we now had, but that job didn't work out, so... My brother-in-law, having completed his house, I moved in there with my 2 kids. There was him, his, and my sister and their 2 kids, and my elder sister with her 2 kids. We're all in the one house. And we lived in harmony with each other. But I had got a permit to build a house on this block of land which I had in Bayswater. I was going to build a timber-framed asbestos place, the same as everyone else. And... asbestos went off the market, so I was going to build a cement place, build it out of cement. There was a system by using a travelling mould, you could build up cement walls and build a house that way. I got the foundations down to floor height, cement dried up. Meanwhile, the pressure's on, not pressure, but we felt we had to get on our own, so on this block of land which I own, I built a garage 10 by 20 feet. And my wife and 2 kids and I lived in that for 2 years while I was building the house. The cement dried up, so bricks became available. So I finished up building a brick and tile place over a period of 2 years, because we're doing it weekends, and it was necessary to have a bricklayer. The bricklayer that I eventually got, well, sometimes he'd turn up, sometimes he wouldn't. If he didn't turn up of a weekend, that's a whole fortnight gone. Other times he'd turn up bleary-eyed and staggering a bit, and I can pick out patches in that wall now of his bad days, which he put in there with us. But we did eventually get that house finished, and we lived in it for some 46 years, I think it was. And we had 2 daughters grew up there, became teenagers, they married from there. And then I thought, one day I had, well, one period I went over the Eastern States on a holiday, and on the way home I thought, well, what the heck am I going to do now? I'd done all these silly things that I wanted to do. This was 46 years later. So I thought, I'll sell the house. So we did that. We sold the house. My wife and I bought a smaller and more modern unit, and we're quite content there with the way things are going. Our family drop in and out. We now have about, well, we've got two daughters, six grandkids, six great-grandkids, and they are in and out of this place quite regularly. We're fortunate in having a very close family. My wife's been to England several times since the war, of course. I've never been overseas. I've never wanted to. But
why not?
Well, number one, I've never had enough money. Number two, if I get time and a bit of finance for a holiday, I travel around Australia. I've travelled around Australia in a VW Combi van once. My wife and I take separate holidays because she says tents don't have en suites. I've also ridden a motorbike around Australia when I was 72 years of age. I think I did that trip. And these things, well, to me, this is my country, and I never really wanted to see anything else. I have been back to Greece. The federal government took 20 of us over there to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the invasion of Greece, and we were there to represent Australia.
What did that feel like?
Ah, now that was a very proud moment because we had the best of accommodation and all facilities being representatives of Australia, and the Greek people there just couldn't do enough for you. You'd be walking down the street and they'd just come up and touch your arm and just say Australia. They knew who you were, and they were really that way with us. We got on well together. And of course, got a bit emotional. We saw some of the old battlefields where we'd put up some pretty horrendous sort of combats with the Germans. But it was quite an eye-opener in many ways. I'd never lived in luxury before, but here it was. And even coming home in the super jets there we are right up in the top bubble. And well, the problem was there, you couldn't reach the little books on the seat in front of you. You had to get up and get them, which is a bit of a problem, really. Of course, you walk into an aeroplane, there's a staircase, and you think, strike me lucky, a staircase. Because don't forget, when I was a kid, Kingsford Smith flew the Pacific Ocean, the first man to fly the Pacific Ocean. And this is one of the many things which have intrigued me in my life. I've seen the first man fly the Pacific Ocean. I've seen the first man on the moon. Now, that's quite a bit of advancement for the human race.
In relation to your trip to Greece, given that it was going back to a place that you lost 60 years before, how did that feel?
It was interesting. I must confess, I never felt a great deal of emotion. I think because it was all so long ago. And there was no attacking Germans, there was no Air Force bombing us, and we were made a great fuss of wherever we went. And I remember sitting down at a little cafe from the point where we were evacuated in the dead of night, and there we were just drinking coffee, and that's quite an experience there. And as well as the Corinth Canal, there was some pretty heavy fighting there. Well, it's still the same, it's always there. And I'm afraid there were ceremonies which we attended which were appropriate, and there was places in between where it was sightseeing and they did not influence you so much. But I had the distinction of laying the first wreath on behalf of Australia with another colleague. We laid the first wreath on behalf of Australia at the new Senna's Tap or Memorial at Retimo, where we fought our battles. So that was a big moment in my life as far as I'm concerned. We were treated like real gentry. It was really a remarkable experience because we'd lost and they were treating us like heroes.
Obviously we've done almost full circle now. Would you like to finish it there?
Well, there isn't a great deal more, I don't think. I've related what I've done since the war. the three girls that we met in Newcastle at 1939, we still write to them, I visit them regularly. I fortunately am in fairly good health. I have, at the age, I'm not boasting here, I'm just saying what I have done. I ran my first marathon at 62. I've been in a two-day white water event in here known as the Avon Descent. I've ridden a motorbike around Australia at 70, over 70 years of age. I think I was 74 at the time. And I still enjoy a pretty active sort of a life, so I am more fortunate than many fellas that I represent in my capacity. I have a considerable amount of standing within the community, which is responsibility, and you've got to live up to your commitments. And I enjoy doing this because it's a challenge and it keeps me going. And at this stage, at 84, I've got a calendar that is frightening at times. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I also keep fairly young, mentally young, because now next weekend is the folk festival at a town called Boyup Brook in Western Australia. I have to go down there with a bunch from the Bush Parts and Yarn Spinners Association to put over a few acts for the folk festival there. And these things keep me actively engaged. And if you're an English fellow, well, I'm a member of, I'm a Masonic member. I've occupied the Master's Chair three times, and my title at this moment is Past Grand Director of Ceremonies. So I've done a fairly good job there, apparently. And between one thing and the other, although I'm ageing, I'm hanging in there. I seem to be meeting up with commitments that I've engaged in, all of them volunteer. And I'm still looking forward to quite a few active years yet, and I trust my country's going to have quite a few active years ahead of it yet.
I'd like to wish you all the best. Thank you very much for all of your help. And once again.
Yeah, I'm glad I lived through it all, to tell you.